I will invite James and Lenz and Timo and Remo and, well, all the speakers who want to join us to just sit here. And I suggest to, when I proposed this idea to have a panel and then later a burst of a feather was the, well, I wasn't actually sure if the attendance will be more than a dozen of people. So actually I thought I will be a round table between the presenters that I will hope that they will stay. Well, I'm extremely pleased to see all of you guys. And pretty much the idea is to answer this question and explore if the answer that I just wrote here will work. So I don't know how we will use the microphone story, if we share, or do you want me to use this? We don't have this one?
Yeah.
I use this?
Yeah, you use that. So pass that one, pass the echo.
And then could you please pass me more cable? So just sit here. And I also will encourage all you guys to just came a little bit closer, because you know how it is working. Every time that you pass this, the speaker is already say 10 words, which usually are the ones that say yes or no to the question, and then you miss the part. But why, you don't want to see me like that? Done. And yes, there is a, if someone can, yeah, cool. So essentially the topic of why parallelismo is that, well, we have been writing, well, I haven't been writing code for 25 years, but the code has been written in a way. Now all these guys say, forget that. And even James mentioned David Patterson. He's a very charismatic professor in Berkeley. A character, either. I met him and had absolutely no idea. And then later I asked, oh, hey, who is this guy? Did you meet Patterson? I said, well, I knew that he was a Rolling Stone or something like that. But the guy is out there saying that there is a lot of money to make in parallelism, for example. That excites me. So the question would be, why parallelism, and is open source, multi-core, New Zealand an answer for that? So I will ask.
Is open source, multi-core, parallelism in New Zealand an option? Is that the question? Is that what we're starting with? I think so. I think there's enough great stuff happening here already. Open source is very alive in New Zealand. Parallelism, cluster computing, high-performance computing, multi-core computing, it's all very alive here. I think it's a great starting place for it, and it just needs to keep on growing here. And I think if we can start teaching it early, that's the way to get it growing as much as we can, because being stuck in particular curriculums won't make that happen either. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I know that how we're doing it isn't the right way. How about that? Pass it on.
Well, for an effective panel, you normally want to find someone with a rebuttal, and I don't know. Am I supposed to say, no, New Zealand's not going to be able to do this? So, I don't know. Australia's probably, you know, going to be a part of it, too. How about that?
All right. Yeah, I'm from Australia. I'm from Melbourne. I don't think parallel, you can probably guess that I don't think we need to teach parallel programming to people, because I think the compiler should do it. But that means that you still need people to write the compiler, or experts to tune it and things like this, or to tell the compiler when it's wrong, because they don't always get everything right. We know that. I mean, we saw it today, somebody had a little bit of handwritten assembly to do the really performance critical bit. Yeah, so we still do need control, but yeah.
But what about the stick handling?
Yeah, I'm not quite. I'm not exactly sure what the question is, but I think people haven't quite twigged how important it is, because the change in hardware is being thrust upon them, and people have not quite realised. So I think making everybody aware of that is an important thing.
Yeah, well, I think there is a divergence about to occur. We've had a convergence within chip design, where things like on-chip memory controllers have started off with Sun and other technologies, AMD, and now Intel's got it. So a lot of things have a lot of it has been converging, but I think we're getting to a point now where it's just not that easy to use the number of cores which are available. Some things you can do. I mean, I can install Apache and run up a web server and use a hell of a lot of threads, no problem at all. But to get other things like primes, my thing, going, it's very, very difficult. So I think you're going to have a divergence where you're going to have, James was saying, that you're going to have different sorts of cores on a chip, because you're just going to throw more and more functionality on there. There's also going to be chips where you're going to have 100 cores on them, and there will be programs which can easily make use of those. And I think that's where it's going to diverge. You're going to have a sort of consumer products which have a limited number of cores, and except for the graphics, which can parallelize very, very well. And then you're going to have cloud computing, which has massive number of cores which can be used.
Just a comment on what you say, and then there are at least one or two questions around. If it's hard to parallelize cores that homogeneous, will be even harder to parallelize different cores. So that's a question that. But first, from.
Yeah. So it seems to me like part of this divergence that's been talked about is a problem of education. Now, we've already heard James talk about education, but I was wondering if there were any sort of specific Titan II approaches, for advocating, that universities, and more specifically high school, sort of catches up in sort of developing new curricula and standards for students, so that, the technology trends, parallelism now, but other things as they develop, are sort of brought into the curricula in a timely manner, so that we don't have this constant catch up by the education departments on what technology is coming out and what programmers and hardware designers and so on should be aware of.
Who wants to answer? You?
I'm happy to say that New Zealand has plenty of parallel computing in the curriculum already, and that as much catching up as may be needed with everything around the world in parallel computing, New Zealand has a great start in it. I know that Massey's got a parallel computing group, a distributed computing group. Victoria University with Dr. John Hine is running lots of parallel computing stuff. Of course, University of Canterbury with Blue Fern, they've got it rocking. We've got lots of companies around here who are taking advantage of parallel computing processing. New Zealand Supercomputer Center, hires out their time. You can do computing on demand as needed. So I think there's enough momentum there. We just need to keep groups like this going to keep the momentum going, to make them realize it is important to keep it going.
Yes, but before that, because I know that you will, I want to ask Timo, what's Germany doing?
First, I want to add one little thing. I think it was Mr. Sutter from Microsoft who was writing a text about the free lunch is over. It was a couple of years ago, perhaps Hutter, correct? And it's still the truth. Google it, read it, enjoy it. It's the text which says what you have to do. And we have not done our homework within the last couple of years. Because he was saying that we will end up like that. It happened. And I'm advocating to carry on like that, keeping people educated. Also, I think a lot of the professors have the problem that they don't understand the fundamental things about parallel programming because it is so hard to get right. They have not learned it at university, and so they would have to learn it by themselves. They are probably too lazy, I don't know. So we're stuck at some point because hardware's there, and we are running into a blind alley if we don't react on the software side, no matter how we do it, either by automatically doing it or doing it in the application. So we just have to do it in some way. Yes.
Right. My thought on your question was that universities haven't really picked up on teaching parallelism properly yet, and it strikes me as if an electric drill was invented and all workshops are refusing to learn that black magic kind of thing. So they are very, very slow at taking up. They buy the hardware and they're not using it, and they even buy Bluefern in Canterbury. And I have my thoughts about that as well, because University of Canterbury there is enforcing that their users start learning how to parallel compute themselves, because they don't have enough support staff to do it for them. So that's unfortunate. It's a bit of an unfortunate situation initially, which turns out to be a benefit because now they have a proper parallel computing teaching program there. There's one more thing that came to my mind, which was prevalent all of the day. It seems to me that when it comes to thinking parallel, I had always that analogy in my head all day today, because we heard about Erlang and C with building blocks and Haskell and Mercury and all these different language approaches. I thought that to start thinking in something properly, you need to have the vocabulary. And basically, as Orwell said it, you know, if they remove vocabulary, then you can't think about it. And that's exactly it. I think that's why I like the threading building blocks so much, because they're a language feature, so you can start thinking about it. So, yeah, that's just something I wanted to. It seems to me like a discussion about what language to use and what vocabulary to use.
Yep. Yes, but before that, may I take a question from the floor?
I don't know if this is so much of a question as just of a comment. I was talking with him earlier today. I'm not an academician. You know, I work for a business, and I think what you guys are talking about is flows from the business, flows from the fact that businesses are inherently conservative, that they've got a lot of money invested in Java or C# or .NET or C or whatever it is that they've done in, that business processes are really, let's face it, 90% of it is read some data from the database, stick it in front of a user, and let them change it and save it back. I mean, that's basically it. So probably what's happening is that the because the businesses have not adopted these new languages, the schools don't feel the need to teach them, and they instead feel the need to educate these children to get jobs, which means they're going to have to learn Java or C sharp or whatever. And you know, and I don't know how you're going to break that cycle, but maybe your approach should be to go from the other end, go to the businesses, convince them to use the other languages, and then the whole education system will follow.
I think that it's a yes for business.
just a small note on that one. I think we see currently a quite steep take up of functional languages. Even Microsoft is trying to push out F sharp, and so there is quite a move towards functional programming in the moment. Functional programming has been around for a long time, really long time, but it's only in the last couple of years that it really gained the traction it probably needs to throw over lots of those concepts that we've been with the last 20 years. And just think in that slightly odd manner of programming functional, and just get past this fear that we have to do something new. There are plenty of choices of functional programming languages around in the moment, and there are currently some that are trying to settle into established markets, like we have with Scala or with Clojure. And they all try to address this very same problem. We try to have one big thing that we try to deploy on an even bigger thing. The problem is that bigger thing doesn't really scale. And functional programming gives you a wonderful way to actually scale things really, really granular.
Small business which operates in Wellington, which is not what I call a huge market. So, are you selling parallel programming to customers?
Indirectly, yes, sure. Okay. My stack uses Erlang quite a bit, and so I indirectly sell services via functional programming. And major telcos use functional programming for their telephone switching. Erlang has been around for about, commercially, more than 10 years, and is switching some of the largest telephone switches. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of functional programming around that is actually used in real life usage, and there is a lot of Erlang that is emerging a lot around places, especially around among younger companies like Facebook use it, Yahoo uses it quite a bit. They all noticed that with traditional programming models, they're hitting a dead end that they can get around really easy. I don't say that it's impossible to get around those edges without traditional programming models. Only the effort is so much higher. If you program in a functional way, the effort is really, really low to get around all those scalability issues.
And James, that you have a little bit bigger market than Lens. What's your thoughts about trying to, like the question of the gentleman about, okay, why would he buy your TBB book?
Why would you buy my TBB book? It's great.
Okay, let's give it for free. Okay, here you are.
Oh, now there goes my royalty. You know, part of me wonders if the problem with teaching isn't so much what we need to teach as what we need to stop teaching. In fact, one of the speakers earlier today was talking and showed step one, step two, you know, what was open the doors and then fire the missile or something like that. Do them in the right order. Well, we all think of programming as a sequential step one, two, three. We teach it that way thoroughly. And that's that really is not the way to write an effective parallel program. And if you think, yeah. But we teach that, and that's one of my fears. How old should I say I am? When I learned programming, professors were horrified when we came to the university because most of us were programming in BASIC. Thanks to Bill Gates and others, we BASIC was the first programming language a lot of people had. And they said, we need to unprogram you. We need to, you know, undo that. It would be better if you hadn't learned anything. And I think with parallelism, it's like that a lot. We teach all these things. Parallelism is intuitive. If there had been a queue of 200 people downstairs checking in at registration when you showed up behind one person, I don't think any of you would have thought, oh, darn. You would have thought something like, you know, that there's no solution. You would have thought, oh, why don't they open up some more people? That's parallelism. We see parallelism. We use it in our everyday life all the time, and it stumps me how to put my finger exactly on what we're teaching wrong, but we are definitely teaching programmers things that cause them to go down a path and not be able to think about parallelism as easily as they could have if we had taught them differently. Oh, this is resonating. You know that yesterday I was up in Auckland talking to a group, and someone asked me a question, and they liked my answer, even though it was a useless answer. The answer was, why haven't functional programming languages taken off? And I said, I don't know. It seems to be hard for people to learn them in mass way, and I don't know, and I'd love if anybody has an idea of how to explain why they haven't. Maybe the hardware hasn't existed, if that would say if they're going to take off now. I think they're wonderful, but darn if I can get anyone, you know, enough people to use them, you know.
Because it's raised. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. I don't know. Okay. Maybe you are the first. Yes. You are, me.
We'll all talk at the same time. Just a couple of really quick thoughts. My first processor I ever did in programming on was an 8051, then a 68 HC11 in an embedded context. And one of the things this is actually what I wanted to touch on, is that one of the things I realized when I started coming to parallel computing in a more conventional sense is a lot of what I was being taught I'd already learned about, because you got used to locking sort of issues with your interrupt service routines and this kind of thing. So as an embedded program, you tended to have some sense of not true necessarily true parallel execution, but at least some of the general issues that apply. There is also that side benefit coming from an embedded background. I think you naturally tend to think efficiently in terms of your coding. One of the things that's interesting.
It's a question there.
There isn't a question. Just a couple of real quick observations. But one of the things I think may help us in the parallel computing field is the increasing interest in things like embedded platforms like Arduino, which I've got some involvement with. So we've now got a whole generation of kids coming along who are interested in writing efficient code again. And hopefully we'll get things coming out of that.
I'm sorry, I would suggest that all of you guys first talk, and then maybe they start to give condensed answers, because if you come and go, then maybe we need to leave the room in half an hour.
Sorry, that was all I want to say. Embedded may yet help us.
And I think it is much more valuable than the floor she is. So he's beside you.
You touched briefly on changing the way education is being done in the moment with Java and et cetera. That's a much bigger problem than just parallelization. There is people with a couple of years more education who are still missing things that are incredibly basic. People who are finishing degrees without having a clue what they're doing. Is there anything obvious we can be doing about this? I know it is kind of off topic, but I get ignored on that one.
Sometimes when I want to do jobs at home, maybe it's compressing a large file, or maybe it's making a download go fast or something like that, and I think this is something that you can parallelize. I want to use all the cores on my CPU or something like that. I use make minus J to do parallelism. Am I mad? To use make minus J to do parallelism, am I doing it wrong? Is there a better way to do it than doing something on the command line with a make file? What can I use instead of make to do parallelism? quick and dirty. Not just compiling, maybe it's compressing a file and using all the cores on your PC. Yep. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to make some comments about teaching parallel computing. Share my little experience with it. It seems everybody here is very optimistic regarding parallel computing, and I'm going to throw a little bit noise here based on my experience. So basically, parallel computing, I think, is very diversified, and actually they could be carried out at different levels, as you said. Even make file, they can be parallelized. And we can also do parallelization at the architecture level, at the instruction level. Compiler can also do it, can help with it. And the runtime, we have a library that can support it. even high-level language, like a function language or Java, they can even support it. So given this kind of versatile, I think teaching parallel computing is really challenging. Recently, I discussed with my colleague regarding teaching a new paper on parallel computing. And I mentioned a few common platforms like TPP, Silk, OpenMP, MPI, and languages like OCaml or Erlang. But those sort of things, I just list maybe 6 or 7. My colleague said the paper, we only have 13 weeks, and each week we have just 2 lectures. So for each item, we need probably 2 weeks to teach. And then regarding those platforms, we need 13 weeks to teach parallel computing. But without any particular platform, we can't teach parallel computing, because there's no ground if we don't teach any platform without any platform to implement the algorithm. So the issue is really about, do we really can have a kind of standard for parallel computing? Or
maybe it's the time for open education to
a kind of standard. But given that we have versatile hardware and we have versatile software, and it's very hard to standardize. And even if the hardware keep changing and keep have its own optimization, the software have to adapt to it. And we all have to, you know, one problem can be solved in one platform very well, but if we move to another one, it doesn't work.
I will ask to pass to Benjamin.
Yeah, so that's basically my comments about it.
Yep, and then it will be back to the panel.
I'm going to hopefully really quick. It's just a couple of thoughts I had. One is, you're talking about the problem of education and teaching parallel programming and the fact that we don't know how to do it or we don't do it. However, in the class next door, in most of the same universities, they teach hardware design. And they teach VHDL and they teach Verilog, which is essentially non-sequential languages. So maybe there is here crossover to look at, and the fact that there is people who know how to teach parallelism in a language, except that ends up being translated into hardware, but it doesn't necessarily have to. And another thought I wanted to react to you. I know why you said that, because you come from a functional programming model, and you said the solution is to have the compiler solve the problem. And I think we're touching a bit on his comment as well about all those legends of Java programmers who can only produce bloat, is that that way I disagree with you is you have to understand what your tool does. To make effective use of a tool, whether it's a good functional programming language, whether it's going to be Java, whether it's going to be anything, you have to understand what it does to make effective use of it. And we back to the decision time, but just a couple of thoughts.
So now we come back to the panel, and pretty much we have three things here. And one is, okay, there is a need for parallelism, yes. Now there is a need for teaching, and there are different levels. So I always remember 30 years ago when I was teaching mathematics, something really nice and easy to sell for students that are hormonally active. So, and then I did that for a couple of decades until becoming whatever I am now. And it's exactly hard to sell. There needs to be a need and an application, but at the end of the day, it needs to be people passionate about selling a part of the need. And someone said about, okay, we are just adding more and more. And that sounds to me like even a contract or a standard form that you fill for the government. Someone creates one form, and then year after year they modify it. They just add new and new clauses. They never review from the very beginning if the basic concept is right. So there are many options. You enter to teach in university. Why not in high school? Why not in primary school? Because the examples are the traditional contract example about how having new women having one baby or something like that. You know what I'm talking about. So it's that essential to change the mind for that? And the final point is, are we especially positioned in Australia, New Zealand to have some sort of opportunity here? And why, and this is absolutely a personal opinion, I strongly believe, and you see the diversity of the panel, it's as an open society, as an innovative country, as really well-prepared people, wouldn't be easier to start something from here. So that's just my selfish opportunity by owning the make. So who wants to continue? We still have time. Okay.
You know me, I always have an opinion. I think the reason that I say compilers can't solve the problem is because I think of the way that we program today, and algorithmic transforms compilers can't do. You don't write a bubble sort, feed it into the compiler, and out pops a quick sort. So that's good. Maybe someday we'll write that, but that's going to be really bad for programmers. We won't need them anymore. Our value add is that imagination, that design, so forth. But the comment that Anwar put in his blog a few years ago about only 1% of programmers can program parallelism, that was an observation about today, how many people really feel that they're parallel programmers and understand all the concepts. But you know what, if you go back 3 decades or so, very few people knew how to program computers. Programming computers today in Java is nothing like punching out a card deck in assembly language for the early machines and understanding registers and all that. Yes. So, you know, I think with parallelism, I think everyone's going to need to be aware of parallelism. Everybody's going to effectively become a parallel programmer, and most people aren't going to think of themselves as parallel programmers. Just like all of us are writing programs today that cause microprocessors to transfer values from one register to another, we just don't think, well, okay, that's handled for me. So some of the things we saw, like Mercury, Haskell, Erlang, whatever, those stand a strong potential if you write in those that the parallelism becomes implicit and the compiler can automate it. But the compiler's not automating an algorithm transform, it's packaging the parallelism. And it's one last observation. We did computer architecture for decades, and until the mid-80s, there was not a good college textbook. There were lots of college textbooks, and I learned with a few of those. And then in the mid-80s, I think 86 or so, Hennessy and Patterson came out with quantitative approach to, which just totally revolutionized, in my opinion, and many others, I think, the teaching of computer architecture. And it said it's all in the numbers. Pay attention, design it. My favorite thing, loving computer architecture, was the fact that they said, if you're coming up with a clever cache replacement algorithm, and everybody loved that at the time, test it against random. against random cache replacement. And that was revolutionary because there were people promoting cache replacement algorithms that actually performed worse than random. That you shouldn't have had to point that out in a college textbook, but they did, and it helped teaching computer architecture. We could easily be 2-3 decades off before someone can write a book as important as that one was for parallel programming. It's my opinion. We have a lot to figure out about what works with people and so forth, and I couldn't be happier than to be in the middle of that. And, you know, by the time that book gets written and stuff, they're all going to look back at us and say, it wasn't that hard. What on earth were they debating? Why'd they get together into the wee hours of the day debating how to parallel program? It's obvious. So. Anyone else?
Yeah, make it interesting.
Yeah.
And short.
I agree. Okay. I agree with what James has said. We can't transform algorithms like that. It'd be nice if we could and always be right, but it's just not going to happen, as far as I know. What was your second? There was a second point, which I did think about. Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, we've had to teach different concepts before. We should generalize this out. Say, it's not just about teaching parallelism, it's about teaching some aspect of a trade. We've had to teach aspects of trades before to a community of people that do that trade. We should take a lesson from what's happened previously. It's not a unique problem to parallel programming.
Heaven 3 gets Donald Knuth. Art of computer programming and counting. And, well, I came through this pretty much legend, and I started to read things that, and it was an interview about, I don't know, years ago, and the guy directly say, multi-core parallel programming, bullshit. So it's...
You're paraphrasing a bit.
Okay, you read it?
Well, he was very clear that he's not going to be the guy that writes the Knuth's Art of Computer Parallel Programming. That interview is very clear. But, yeah, he did doubt a bit the enthusiasm around it, but I think he was doubting more that everybody's going to become a parallel programmer and think that way. But parallelism is going to be there, and it's going to get used, and I think most people aren't going to think it's parallel programming at all. But... anyway, someone in this room is probably going to figure out what to do with it, and you're going to make millions off of doing something with it, not teaching parallelism.
That will be my final question about, and that heard, I don't remember where, that it's not about to do certain things faster or better, but it's about imagining things that haven't been thought before. So parallelism, it's something that should solve problems that we never imagined that could be solved. And it's not about thinking to do the crazy things that Remo has been doing in his career about. It sounds a little bit impressive that, I don't know. But I would never start to think about finding water in Mars by applying parallelism. It's something, I won't came with crazy examples now, but I think that the paradigm shift, if any, is to think different, think things that hasn't been thought before. So, Timo, I would love to hear from you, because you say that we have been doing a lot of things wrong or not good enough.
There's a big chance.
I think we just didn't listen to some people who had a good vision years before us. So that's what we just didn't listen to them. That's what okay. We did wrong.
Well, we are listening to you now.
So, yeah, I can't just advocate that everything we've heard today about parallelism should be in somehow be taught to all our students, friends, whatever, and that will make sure that tomorrow's technology in hardware will be used by the software we are developing. Otherwise, we just get stuck at where we are with the software. We probably have new processors, but we cannot utilize them.
Well, I will now just do the classic round of the panel that gave the panelists 30 seconds to a concluding remarks. But before that, I need to let you know how grateful am I for your presence. But at the same time, I need to be grateful that you leave fast anymore. Because for logistic reasons or whatever, this room needs to be absolutely free in 15 minutes. So we should, this round of 30 seconds obviously will take 35 seconds from each. But after that, I will invite that everyone who wants to talk with everyone, just don't do it here. Thank you very much. And please start with Lance.
Well, I can only advocate for functional programming, obviously. I think if we get just deeper into functional programming and advocate for functional programming, we get our minds stretched in a way that parallel programming becomes way more natural for all our programming we are doing, never mind which language we are using.
I won't even need the 35 seconds. I'll just say that I want us to make people profit from Moore's Law also in the future.
Well, I like that sentiment. So we can, one final thought. We're at a point now where we can make computers faster. For a long time, we doubled their performance roughly every 18 or 24 months. We can actually exceed that now. We're limited more by the imagination of what people can do with it. The ability to add cores, we could produce a 50 or 100 core machine today. Not enough people would buy it, so we're not going to do that. But it's a fascinating thing to think about. There's this explosion of computation that we've seen for so long. We're on the verge now where if we can figure out what to do with it, Intel and other companies will be competing to produce machines of fantastic capabilities.
Just real quickly, I have to say I do agree fully with James and Paul that we will see a lot of the parallelism hidden underneath, and we won't, for most cases, have to worry about that, but somebody will. Somebody will always have to worry about that, so it still does need to be taught somehow to some people in some way, and let's keep on doing it, even if we do automate some of the parallelism.
Cool. Okay. Wow.
Wow. That's great. Believers.
Okay, pass it.
Yeah, if you do have a 150-core machine, I would really love it. I just can't afford it. One day. I forgot.
Okay.
I always forget.
That's on.
Well, programming as it is now is about as complex a problem as the human mind's capable of dealing with. If we add parallelism to that, then that adds another order of magnitude. So we need to find ways to reduce that complexity.
Well, I just make my comment from a point of view from being a storage architect, where the amount of data will increase to meet the available storage. Well, now that we have these excessive amounts of cores and continue to grow, I'm sure something will fill it. And I think the people in this room are the ones who are going to fill up those cores.
It's easy to fill it with data parallel stuff, but how many of you, when you're not doing something with data parallelism, can think of 80 things at once to give to a core? Like,
thank you very much, all of you. And thank you, GE, also, and all the panelists, and mainly you, which made this possible. So again, thank you very much, and well, let's talk about Open New Zealand and Australia one day soon. Thank you very much. Now get out.